All right. So the last three answers for me on page 30 would be the list from 1 John 2, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life, there on page 30. And then go ahead and take like a minute, and I want you to fill out that list of six, the TV, sports, scripture, devotions, praying thing. You don't have a pen? Okay. Oh, she got one. All right.
So the box thing is page 32?
Nope. No, we're on page 30. We're still wrapping up chapter 9. So there's an exercise at the bottom of the page that has six different modules as far as guessing how many hours you spend doing each one each week. Average, not this last week. Sometimes our weeks are different. So go ahead and take a minute and personalize those. There's only, how many hours are there in a week, babe? 100 and, there's only 100 something, so. So by the end, the six of those shouldn't add up to more than the hours in a week.
I'm counting the time for some practice.
Yeah, I think it says sports on there. Yeah. Yep, sport practice. You guys done?
There's a quiz.
I know.
Hello. Oh, don't bother answering that one. There is. Remember I gave it to you guys the first week in September, and then the second week we did it verbally, and then I dropped it because everyone was getting really bad scores.
I don't remember this.
But maybe that's why. Yeah, so don't bother answering number six. But when you're done, turn to page 31 and add the first two up and then the last four up and put them in the blanks on the top of page 31. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the third and final step is the question right below that. Which gets the most of your time? Yeah. And you don't have to say it. Just write it down. I don't know how you would answer that. Either the first list or the second list or maybe sacred and secular things. However you want to answer it. Make sure you do it in a way that you can understand it later. Because I'm not going to ask you guys to share, but I want you to think about it and write it down so it seems more real to you. So you're aware of your life. Done? You done? Great. Okay. Lesson 10. This is also materialism, so we'll just segue right into it. What's wrong with materialism? Okay, we've just looked at 1 John where it was compared to lust, but how is it lust? Okay, how is it bad? And I think the first very obvious, let's read the text. It's Luke 14, is less intense text. Verses 26 through 27. And this is actually one we've talked about in class already, very recently. If anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own mother and father and wife and children and brother and sisters, yes, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And then verse 33. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. So there at the end of the chapter, he touches on the concept of materialism. Everything you have, everything you own or have access to, and really anything physical that you might value more than your God or your relationship with God can be a temptation to be materialistic. Okay, so since I just laid it out, what's wrong with being materialistic? Does anything pop in your head? You can answer too, since there's so few of us. What's wrong with being materialistic?
Just like worshiping him in church, but you know your devotions at home, and if your thoughts are starting to form to just stuff, then that's a problem.
Yeah, and I think that command was given specifically because of the idolatry of false gods in that society. But the reasoning behind it of God coveting our worship is still the same. It doesn't matter whether the God is a demon inside of an idol, or whether it is a thing that's inanimate and unfeeling but still getting our worship. It's still God not getting it. So, yeah, it's been a problem for a very, very, very long time. So one of the things Frank says that is wrong with materialism is that it has a wrong focus, and that is one of your blanks. It focuses on visible things rather than invisible things. Okay, I think you guys have a block there, a graph almost. And the top two answers are it lives for visible rather than lives for invisible. So what are visible things? And what are invisible things? No, like literally. What is visible and invisible things? This should be a really easy one. I think this is a second or third grade word. What is vision?
Seeing.
Okay. So invisible thing. Can you see invisible things? No. And you can see visible things, okay? So the problem with materialism is it focuses on only what is visible or tangible. Okay, somebody invented a tangible, invisible object, this metaphor would go down the drain. But there is no such thing. Everything that's tangible in this world is visible. So the focus of that being on this stuff, like if I wanted to look impressive when I was like speaking to you guys on Wednesday nights, because that's when I stand, you know, and that's all I cared about, I would probably go out and blow a bunch of money on a nicer podium, right? Because I want to look really good. But I don't value that. I value the content of my teaching, not how I look. Nobody should do that. Okay. Turn to Hebrews 11. I'll have one of you guys read that. This is the chapter of people who are known for their faith. We're going to read verses 8 through 10. Or somebody is. Rach, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and read 8 through 10.
Hebrews 11, By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God.
Okay, so according to that text, Abraham never saw the fulfillment of the promises God gave him. He died before the promise about his descendants being as numerous as the sands of the sea or the stars of the heaven became realistic, right? Because how many stars are there? Well, we don't know because the universe goes on infinitely. So more than we have figures for. Obviously, he passed away before that. So he lived a life of obedience because he realized that invisible things are more worthy of going after, of sacrificing for, than visible things, right? If you were told, if you only had three relatives in the world that you knew of, one was your, you know, father and your brother and your wife, and you were told to leave one of them and move, would you do it? Well, it depends on who told you or who asked. In this case, it was God. And Abraham said, okay, I'll obey. Because he knew that worshiping and valuing the invisible God was worth more than hanging on to tangible relatives. So he wasn't governed by the lust of the eyes, right? Like, do you guys remember what happened to Lot? His Abraham's relative, there's two different times where he allowed the lust of the eyes to affect him. There was one where they were splitting up. They came to the new land and they were deciding where to live. And Lot saw one direction. It was green. It was pleasant to the eye for probably shepherding or flocking. And he desired that. And Abraham said, okay, I'll go the other way, because they didn't want to live by each other. And then the second time, when Lot actually lived in the city, and he didn't want to leave, and that's not necessarily the lust of the eyes, but he didn't want to leave the convenience of the city just because it was sinful, you know. And that was when Sodom and Gomorrah got judged, and his wife died. So Abraham didn't succumb to lust because he realized that invisible things are more worthwhile. So, can you guys think of anybody else who succumbed to desire for things because of how they looked in the Old Testament? Starting with in Genesis, because I can think of one at the very beginning of the world. People who made decisions based on how something looked.
I mean, you've got the
good. Okay. And the verse literally says that, right? She saw that it was good for eating. You're like, well, so would a blind person have been able to, repel that? No, maybe. But it was also mental lust, not just lust of the eyes, right? Okay. Lot chose Sodom and Gomorrah. David chose Bathsheba, which what led to adultery, murder, and ultimately the death of their son. It's horrific. Okay, materialism also lives for the temporal rather than the permanent, is the second one. What does temporal mean, or temporary? Again, you can probably get it by thinking of it as opposite of permanent.
Doesn't last forever.
Yeah. Temporal, right, good, okay. Just for now. Which means that permanent should mean does last forever, because that's the opposite, okay? All right, we already read John 2 for the last lesson. That was the Frank's point for this one was it warns against worldliness, defines it as lust. Excuse me. Why did Moses choose to identify with his Hebrew brethren as opposed to continue being raised as a prince of Egypt? Hebrews actually says, 25, Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh, choosing rather to be mistreated with God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of the Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt. Okay, so he would rather have God's approval than Pharaoh's. Okay, now that seems really obvious to us because we know the whole story of Joseph, right? You know, eventually, you know, God blessed him and he became sub Pharaoh or assistant Pharaoh or whatever. But, I misspoke. We're talking about Moses, not Joseph. Eventually, you know, he was led away. He was able to lead his people away from their bondage, right, and be blessed by God. But when you're defying a leader of a country, it probably didn't seem that simple or easy to Moses. It probably seemed very, very, very hard. So he had to keep a permanent focus in his mind all the time. Because if he had a temporal focus, I think the intimidation of the Pharaoh, which is pretty much the king of the world at that point, would have gotten to him a little bit. I mean, you're talking about hundreds and thousands of guards, thousands and thousands and thousands of slaves at his command. You know, he was able to command the raising of the pyramids with, you know, the snap of a finger. Very powerful man, you know. And he defied him because he valued God's opinion more. All right, and then lastly, materialism lives on things rather than Christ. Does it say lives there or focus? Because mine says focus. In a sense, lives. Okay, well, it's probably a misprint. But it focuses on things rather than Jesus. All right. I'm going to read one text from this, Matthew 6, if you want to follow along. 19 through 21. Say, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and rust destroy it and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves don't break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Okay. Now, what is it, according to that last sentence, what is it implying that will happen to our emotions if we accumulate a bunch of stuff? Or treasure, in this case. What does it say? What does it mean your heart will be there? What do we, usually we refer to the heart organ as the seat of our, or the place of our what?
Your God.
Well, yes, it's where we think God comes and resides because Western civilization has decided that that is the location for what part of our mind. What do we send each other at Valentine's Day? Well, people who are dating. They come in candy form, they come in chocolate form, they come in card form. Valentine's with the shape of hearts. Why? Why Valentine's Day and why hearts?
Hearts are the symbol of love.
Okay, and love is a what? It's an emotion, okay? The heart is the seat of emotion. So, if you tend to love things, putting your heart somewhere is that's a metaphor for saying that's what you love. So, the verse is warning that if we accumulate a bunch of stuff, whether it's clothes, shoes, makeup, I'm trying to think like a girl right now, phones, cars, eventually, I mean, you get to the more expensive stuff, but, or even guys, you know, like I've had so many boyfriends in the last, you know, 5 years or whatever, whatever collection it is you accumulate, it's saying that your temptation is going to be to love those things because there's a lot to love. Okay, it's not like the world doesn't have anything to offer. It just doesn't have anything good to offer. Nothing permanent, nothing worthwhile. There's a lot of distractions that Satan has invented and we allow ourselves to be distracted by. But, so Matthew, I mean, it's Jesus talking, of course, but the Gospel of Matthew records that warning. So, we're out of time, but go ahead.